because we have yielded to the Spirit of God. And I'm so thankful for that. Thank you for your messages that you've been preaching to us. And Dr. Tyson is going to come and preach his final message. Thank you so much for coming. Let's give him a warm welcome tonight.
Well, praise the Lord. That's such a wonderful song. I love songs that are just filled with deep Bible truth. And I love to sing songs to the Lord and tell Him how wonderful He is. His wounds have paid my ransom. I get to go to heaven. Somebody said to me one day, they said, when will we deserve to go to heaven? And the answer is never. We'll never deserve to go to heaven. And if you ever, you've got it all wrong. I mean, the guy asked the question, I thought, you're not comprehending what Jesus did. He paid it all. He paid it all. And we'll never, ever deserve what He did. He just loved us unconditionally. So we serve a wonderful Savior. Well, I'm going to continue from where I was last night. Last night, and I want to encourage you, if you did not get a copy of the book, Raising God's Kids in Sin City, what I am doing is giving you the outline of this book and giving you some of the stories that are in this book you're going to hear this evening. But it's a great tool to have with you, so you can just go back and reference some of the things that we have talked about. Ephesians chapter 6 says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, verse 1, for this is right. Honor thy father and thy mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and that thou mayest live long on the earth. I went to my father one day and I said, Dad, my next door neighbor, David, he gets an allowance, and Mark, he gets an allowance. Can I have an allowance? And my dad said, yes, if you do what I tell you to do, I'll allow you to live. And so when I think of that, I think of that every time I read this verse, that it may be well with thee and that thou mayest live long on the earth. If I didn't obey my parents, I wouldn't live long on the earth. But then it goes on to say, and you fathers, provoke not your children to wrath. We can do things that provoke our children to wrath. We're not supposed to do that, but we're to bring them up in the nurture, that is the discipline, and the admonition, that is the instruction of the Lord. Our responsibility is to make sure that our children are brought up. Parents will say to me, I feel like such a failure. I'm not doing well with my children. I say, well, how old are your children? Well, they're 8 and 10. Well, listen, they're not up yet. Bringing up, there's four different things that are mentioned here. It says, number one, don't provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up and do it in the nurture, that is the discipline, and the admonition, that is the instruction of the Lord. Those four things are things that are given to us, and we have 20 years to do that. Don't feel like a failure if you're halfway through and you're not there yet. You just keep doing those things consistently that God wants you to do. What does He want us to do? Well, we saw that He wants us to pray for our children every single day. We saw that He wants us to play with our children. Let me give you number three. He wants us to participate. We did this with our children. We participated with our children in ministry. If they were involved, they were involved in everything that we did. If I was invited to go somewhere, they went with us. If I was going to go speak somewhere, they went and spoke with us. I was talking to my friend Doug Jackson just the other day. In fact, I'm sorry, just this morning. We were talking. He was talking about a preacher friend of his who is a young preacher. And he said he's traveling. And he said, you know, Dave, he's doing it right. And I said, what do you mean? He said he's taking, when he's traveling, when he's asked to go speak someplace, he always takes his kids with him. And I thought, man, that's great. That's terrific. That's what we need to do. I was preaching in a conference one day, and I was teaching this lesson, and my kids were already up, and they were already out. A friend of mine named John came up afterwards. He said, listen, I'd like to have you come and speak at our missions conference, but if you take your kids with you, does that mean I've got to have all 28 of you guys come to the thing? And I said, no, that was when the kids were young. But the truth of the matter is, we wanted our children to be involved in everything. We wanted them to be involved in everything. We wanted them not to endure ministry or think that the ministry has pulled us away from them. We wanted them to know that ministry was life and life is ministry. And so if we went to go be involved in something, they were going to go with us. We were asked one time to come to a particular camp, for a couples retreat. And I said, that's great. What do we do with the children while we're at the couples retreat? What would the children be doing? And the director of the camp said, oh, you can't bring your children to this couples retreat. And I said, well, then probably we won't be coming because we don't leave our children. And he said, well, this is a couples retreat. I said, I understand that, but I'm not leaving my children. We won't be able to come because my children will need to come with me. And they said, oh. And that was their policy. And I said, okay. So I hung up, and about within the next day, they called back and said, listen, if your children come, will they be involved in serving? Will let your children come if they'll serve? I said, yeah, they'll serve. That's great. Hope, I think, was a baby. But it wasn't a whole lot that she could do. But all the other kids were at least 5 years old or above. I said, what do you want them to do? They said, well, can they serve in the kitchen? I said, sure. And I'm telling you what, my kids went to that camp, and they served in the kitchen. The boys were scrubbing dishes in the back, and the girls were waitresses, and they loved that. The girls loved it because my girls were cute. And so when you have like a little 8-year-old coming up and handing you your plate, they started tipping my girls. And man, they said, this is great. We want to be in ministry full time, you know. So we just made sure that they were involved in ministry. When we went soul winning, they went soul winning. All of my kids have gone out door knocking with me. All my kids think I'm the most bold, effective soul winner in the world. They would tell you that. They would say, my Faith would tell you this. She would say, I'd love to go out door knocking with my dad because my dad can turn any conversation into a soul winning conversation. That is not true. That's not true. My children are bolder than I am when it comes to witnessing. My children are more effective. They are more personable. They are just like naturally aggressive. I have what I call forced aggressiveness. When I was a kid, when they said, we're going to have an oral report, I would say, I'll take the F. Because I'm not standing up in front of anybody, and I'm not talking to anybody about anything. I will not be standing up in front of people. I didn't talk to people. I was more of an introvert, and you say, I don't believe that. It's true. My mom's in heaven, so she can't testify to this truth, but it's true. God changed me when I got saved. God just did a change in my life. My wife said to me one time, I would like to have met you before you got saved. And I said, no, you would not have liked to meet me before I got saved. The fact of the matter is I'm not an aggressive soul winner. I have knocked on thousands, probably tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of doors. And I don't want to exaggerate that. The fact of the matter is I've knocked on doors. I talk to people all the time. But I force myself to do those things. My kids are just naturally aggressive. Where did they learn to do that? They went out ministering with me. They went out soul winning. When my son Joshua started the church, Southern Hills Baptist Church, they were out door knocking all the time. My wife said one time, we were watching Jonathan, and he was what, like 4 years old at that time? You were babysitting? My wife had the stroller, and she was going to take him out for a walk. And this is what happened. She got the stroller. She put him in the stroller, and he looked up, and he's excited. He said, oh, are we going door knocking? See, what kid says that? A kid who has been taught to enjoy ministry with his parents. He went out, whenever he got in the stroller, it was because his mom or his dad was going to walk door to door, or maybe both of them together were going to walk door to door, tell people about Jesus. Look, let your children be involved in ministry. When I went to preach somewhere, they went to preach with me. When we went to dinner after church, they went to with preachers and missionaries. They went with us. Our kids fell asleep. Our kids have fallen asleep on restaurant floors, in diners, on diners floors. They've done all sorts of things. When we went out, they went out with us. If we were invited to speak somewhere, they would travel with us. We were fanatics. In fact, John Getz said, you're just an absolute fanatic about this family thing, aren't you? And I said, yes, I am. I really am. We are fanatical about that. I was It can be embarrassing sometimes. I was at a college several years ago, probably about 20 years ago now. Let's see, Faith was about 8 years old, so probably 23, 24 years ago. I was at this college, and when you're at a college, after you're finished preaching, I think the presidents of the college say, look, make that preacher feel good. Go up and ask him to sign your Bible. And so I was finished preaching in chapel, and I had told the kids, whenever we were going to go someplace like that, I'm going to go preach someplace, I'd say, it's okay, because afterwards we're going to go do this, we're going to do this, because they've heard every message. They don't think Dave Tice, Dr. Dave Tice, they don't think any of that. They just think, Dad, let's go have some fun. So I would always say, look, if I'm going to go someplace and preach, we're going to do something fun. Well, this college happened to be 30 minutes away from Disneyland. And so and it was Faith's birthday, and I said, okay, this is what we're going to do. I'm going to go there, and I'm going to preach, and then after I'm finished preaching, as soon as I'm finished preaching, we're going to take off, we're going to spend the rest of the day in Disneyland. Oh, that's great, that's great. So they're all sitting in the back. They don't care what I'm preaching about. I don't know what they're doing. They're just thinking, hurry up, get over it, get it, get over it, get over it. And so when it was finished, the president of the college said, Dr. Tice, would you just go stand right down here? In fact, I don't think I was a doctor then. He said, just Pastor Tice, would you go down, sit down and just stand here? Because some of our students would like to meet you. So I said, okay, that's fine. And so I went down. And when the message was over, it was all done, this line of college students, a line all the way back to where like that back wall would be, there's kids standing in line just to say hey. And again, I think the president said, do this, make him feel good because he'll support the college, type thing. So I'm up there, and I'm I'm shaking hands with kids saying, hey, how you doing? Well, my family's saying, come on, the service is over, let's get to Disneyland. And so what they do is they send Faith up. Now, Faith is the cutest little blonde-haired girl, and she's like an airhead. And she just comes up, and she comes up and starts pulling on my shirt. And I'm signing Bibles, doing this thing, and I'm talking to kids, saying, hi, how are you doing? What's your name? And I'm talking, and I'm trying to be cordial, and I'm talking, and Faith is saying, Dad. I said, what is up? She said, come on, Dad, let's go. I thought we were going to go to Disneyland. I said, yeah, we will in just a minute. And so I keep talking, and then all of a sudden she stops. And she looks at that line of people, and she looks at me, and she looks at the line of people, and she watches what I'm doing, and she said, what are you doing? You're signing Bibles? What do you think you are, some big shot or something? So God can keep you humble through through having your children with you all the time. But we made sure they participated with us in ministry. Do that. Enjoy it. If you're teaching a Sunday school class, if you're teaching, let your children be involved in what you're doing in ministry so that ministry pulls you together and doesn't pull you apart. Number four, we provoked our children to think. We provoked our children to think. What do you mean by that? We didn't keep our kids from the things that were going on in the world. My extended family has got some really tough things going on. My dad was an immigrant from Lebanon. He was an orphaned child responsible for his younger brother and younger sister when he was 11 years old. From the time he was 11 to the time he was 13, he tried to raise those kids on the streets in Lebanon. He couldn't do it. He farmed out one aunt to somebody who moved to Australia. He farmed out my uncle to somebody there in Lebanon, and he wound up getting on an Italian freighter and finding his way over into America, immigrated to America. He grew up on the streets of New York City. If you've ever seen the show Newsies, I picture him as one of those kids that was just trying to make it on the streets of New York City. He became quite an entrepreneur, made a lot of money and lost a lot of money through the Depression and in different times in his life. But he didn't know a whole lot about Christianity. He didn't know a whole lot about how to raise children. My mom was my mom was in, my dad had been married two or three times before he married my mom. The way my mom and dad got together, people say, how did you wind up living and being born and raised in Las Vegas? My dad heard that my mom was married to a drunk and that he was beating her up and that he had threatened to disfigure my brothers, my older brothers and sisters by throwing acid in their face. And so he went one night to New York City, picked up my mom and my two brothers and one sister, and moved out to Las Vegas, Nevada, because back then, in the early 1950s, you could get a quick divorce in Las Vegas. He had to live there for 6 weeks, and so he lived there for 6 weeks, and then he got a divorce, or she got a divorce, and then he remarried her, and that's how I wound up in Las Vegas. It was just a few years before I was born, that my dad and mom got saved. So I had a dad that was saved, and I had a mom that was saved, but they didn't know a whole lot about raising children, and I have brothers and sisters that are, if you want to talk about dysfunctional family, I can give you just all sorts of illustrations. And so when my kids were growing up, we talked to them about why Uncle Rick is in a situation, why Uncle Ricky is miserable, why when Uncle Ricky was going from one woman to another woman to another woman, we would discuss those things. When divorces took place with my brothers and sisters, when there was drug abuse, we would talk to them about our children, or we would talk to our children about those situations. When I said to my family, when I first moved out to Las Vegas, I said, you need to understand, we'd love to have you come over, but there's no drinking, there's no smoking, and there's no cussing in my home. And they said, well, then we won't be coming over. They won't ever come over. And for several years, they would not come over because that was just the way it was going to be. And we decided, by the way, let me tell you this. You can start where you are. People say, you don't understand my background. We just can't live the way you live. I can tell you this. You can change the pattern of your family in your generation if you're just to say, okay, God, this is going to be tough, but I'm going to do your thing, and I'm going to do it your way. Well, we did that with our children. Our children grew up seeing all sorts of mistakes and learning things from people in our church. When they would do things wrong, we would talk about them. One day, my brother-in-law came over to my house, and he loved our children, and so he'd smoke a cigarette till he got to our front door, and then he would get rid of it, and then he would come in, and he would sit and talk to us for an hour or so until he couldn't stand it anymore. Then he'd get up and go outside, have another cigarette, and come back in and talk to us. But he came in one day, and he said to my kids, he said, you know, I made some money today that your father will never make. And I said, what was that? How's that? He said, I stopped by this restaurant up here. He said, I put in one quarter in a slot machine. I hit a $3,000 jackpot. You'll never do that because you don't gamble. And I said, that's right. We'll never do that. I said, well, tell me about that. How often do you stop at that restaurant? My kids are sitting there listening to that. You're right. Wow, $3,000 in one quarter. And I said, how often do you stop there? He said, what do you mean? I said, well, how often do you stop there? He said, well, I stop there every day. He said, I can drink on the way home. I said, oh, is that right? I said, so I play all the time. I said, well, then I said, so have you ever won before? Well, no, that. But I made $3,000 today. And so I talked to him for a little bit more, get him some more detail about the fact that he's always there and he's always spending money. And then when he left, I said to my kids, I said, hey, let me ask you a couple of questions. I said, do you think he just puts in one quarter every time he goes? No, he probably puts on a whole lot of quarters. I said, do you like the way Uncle Rick lives? No. Would you like to live with Uncle Rick? Oh, no. I said, would you think that since he stops there that he probably puts a lot of money? He said, yeah. I said, let me explain to you something. He probably put in about $6,000 before he ever got that $3,000. And I explained that to our children. They said, oh. I said, is it worth it to spend $6,000 to get $3,000? No. So that's not a good investment. And I said, you wouldn't want to live the way he lived. No. Would you want a daddy like that? No. I said, we love Uncle Rick. We want to win him to Jesus, but we don't want to live and do the things that he does. You're right. Listen, what we did was we didn't hide the things of the world from them. When people came along and said, hey, it's all right. You know, it amazes me today that Christians are talking, cultural Christians are talking about the fact, well, you know, the Bible doesn't specifically say in the New Testament that you shouldn't drink and that kind of thing. I think I would say to our kids, can I tell you what I lived through as a teenager? Can I tell you what it was like? After my dad died, I lived with my brother, my brother-in-law and my sister, because I needed a strong hand on me. And my brother-in-law was a drunk. My brother-in-law came home and would beat up my sister. One night he was beating up my sister. I ran out into the kitchen, and he had my sister up. He was choking her to death, holding her up in the corner of some cabinets, and she was just screaming. And I ran in. I got a gun. I ran out, and I told him, let her go, or I'll blow his head off. The gun wasn't loaded. But I did that. I tell my kids those experiences. I said, and one night I left. That was all because of drinking, which Christians are saying, hey, there's no problem. We teach people it's all right to drink. Listen, we talk from ignorance sometimes. We talk from ignorance. And I don't think we should base theology on experience. But I think we ought to learn from experience, and we ought to understand some things within our culture, and we ought to understand that drinking has destroyed so much of our culture. We need to understand that there are some pretty strong verses that say that wine is a mocker and strong drink is raging, and whosoever is deceived thereby is not wise. Who has woe? Who has sorrow? Who has continual mourning? Those that tarry long with the wine. The Bible tells us this stuff destroys people. The Bible says it's not for kings and it's not for wise men. So much is said, and yet what we do is we base some theology on something that is unsaid or something we don't understand, when there's specific passages of Scripture that say this is not good to be doing. So we justify things, and we just don't want to sound like these dogmatic people. Yeah, the Bible is pretty clear. When you walk into the emergency room, and you're trying to comfort the mother of a baby who's been beaten to death by a boyfriend who got drunk and was out of his head, you think maybe it's not a good thing to be teaching that it's all right to drink. And we would take things like that and we would explain them to our children so they would think things through and they would have a reason for what they believed. So we provoked our children to think. Number five, push consistency. Push consistency. We did at home what we did at church. We didn't try to put on a fake face. Now listen, there's a difference, but let me say this. There's a difference between hypocrisy and discretion. So I would say to our children, you know, there's certain things we talk about in the family that we don't need to be talking about at home. You know, talk about at home that we don't need to be talking about in church. There's certain things that are proper at home that are not proper at church. And this is the illustration that I would use. I would say to my kids, do you think it's all right for me to wear pajamas at home? Oh, yeah. Sometimes I wear less than pajamas at home. And is that okay for dad to do that? Yeah, at home. Well, do you think it'd be okay for dad to wear pajamas while he's preaching? Oh, dad. You don't wear pajamas when you preach. I've used that illustration for years, and then about 5 weeks ago, our Christian school had a pajama day, and everybody's wearing pajamas. And I said, don't do that anymore. You're ruining my illustration. But the fact of the matter is, we would teach them there are certain things that are okay in one venue that are not okay in another venue. That's just the way it is. That's called discretion. And that's being socially aware. That's okay. We would go to certain places that had different convictions than we had about what we should wear and what we shouldn't wear, or what we should say or what we shouldn't say. And we would tell our children, you need to understand that we respect people's convictions. We respect people's convictions. That doesn't mean that we're being hypocrites. If somebody asked me to come and preach someplace where girls aren't supposed to, where the ladies aren't allowed to wear pants, then my wife would wear a dress all the time. Because not because we're trying to be hypocritical, but we're respecting the convictions of others. That's called discretion. That's not hypocrisy. We don't pretend to be something that we're not, but we do honor the convictions. I was driving back east one year to preach in the church where I was trained in North Carolina. As I was heading back, I was growing a mustache, and I can't grow much of a beard. It comes out real blotchy, but I can grow a mustache. I mean, in fact, I look really good in a mustache. I sort of look like Clark Gable from years ago. I'm just a handsome sort of a guy. And so, and the mustache just adds to it. It's like that final touch on a fine painting. And so I was growing this mustache on the way back. When I got back there, my pastor looked at me, and I didn't even think about it. Man, they don't allow facial hair on anybody back then. And this was back 40 years ago, where independent fundamental Baptists wore nothing but white shirts and ties and dark suits and a pen that said Jesus first, and carried the King James Bible, and it had to be a black one. And so I go in, and he looks at me, and I thought, and I told him, before he even asked, I said, listen, I want you to know I'm shaving this off tomorrow before I preach. He was going to have me in the church. I would have just been a bad example. Was it unbiblical? Is it wrong? No. No, nothing wrong with that. But we wanted to honor somebody else's convictions or somebody else's preferences, and that's discretion. That's not hypocrisy. So be real. Be consistent. Listen, when I went to preach at Joshua's church for the first time, I think the church was a couple of years old, and we're in the same town, so it's just I'm not often preaching at his church, and he's not often preaching at ours. So I went over to preach at his church, and this is how he introduced me. He said, the person that's about to speak to you is the same man at home as he is in the pulpit. This happened to me. I got a phone call from a nationally known preacher who's got a worldwide television ministry. He called me up and he said, hey, is this Dave Tyson? I said, yeah. He said, I'd like to do something if I could. I said, well, what's that? He said, I'd like to stop by. He said, I'm going to be out in California. I'd just like to stop in Las Vegas, and I'd like to meet with you and your two sons if I could. I said, okay, that's fine. We were friends. I said, yeah, that's fine. He said, I just have some questions I'd like to ask. I said, okay. So I called up Matt, and Josh said, are you available? And Matt works with us, and so I called up Josh, and he said, yeah, sure, I'll come over. So we got together, and we were going to take this guy to lunch. And he came over, and he sat in my office. I said, why don't you just ask the questions you want to ask right now? What's the deal? He said, okay, I just want to ask one question. And he said, I wanted to look in front of you. I want to ask your boys, why in the world are you in the ministry today? What is it about him that made you want to go into the ministry? And they looked at each other, and they said, well, that's easy. He's consistent. He's real. He's genuine. The person that you're talking to right now is the same person that we talk to every day. I'm telling you, when he said that, I almost started crying. Because I know my inconsistencies. I know my weaknesses. And I thought, wow, these are my two sons saying that. Look, your kids need to see genuineness in you. Hypocrisy will turn them off to what you preach and teach. So push consistency. Number six, prove your convictions. Prove your convictions. Don't just say, we do this because I said so. Now, there are times that you need to do something just because you said so. But listen, give your children a reason. They may not even agree with your reasoning, but look, have a reason for why you teach. The Bible says that we ought to have a reason for the hope that is within us. And your children should be able to understand why you don't do certain things. Why don't we go here? Why don't we do this? Why don't we listen to this kind of music? Why do we do this? And you should be able to genuinely give them an answer about why. Years ago, a popular thing, this thing became popular it was the late 80s or so, guys began to take their pants and they would. Do you remember some of this? Do you remember this? They would take their pants and they would tighten them up right there, like put a rubber band around their ankles. Girls did the same thing, and they became like balloon. Do you remember this, Cody? They became like balloon pants. It was like the thing. And then they would wear tennis shoes, and it just, to me, looked very feminine. And I said to Matthew wanted to do it because Matthew was always cool. I said to my son Matthew one day, I said, "You're a nerd." He said, "Oh, no, Dad. You can say anything you want about me, but I am not a nerd. I am cool." I said, "Well, that's good you know that." So anyway, and we were just kidding because we have a lot of fun together. But he was gonna wear that because that was the thing. It was the popular thing. And I said, "Son, I don't want you to do that." He said, "Why, Dad?" And I could have said, "Just because I said so, that's why, buddy." But I didn't. I just said, "Okay, son, well, here's the deal. Let me explain to you." And I went back to the 1960s, and I explained to him the unisex movement from the 1960s and the social revolution. And I went through this whole thing. It was about a 15 or 20 minute like exposition about how horrible our culture has become and what we need to do and what we need to do and why men should dress like men and women should dress like men. And this is all part of that unisex movement. And I said, and then when I was all finished, I said, "Does that make sense to you?" He said, "No, it doesn't make sense to me." I said, "Well, when I'm gone and I'm not around, are you going to do that to your pants?" He said, "No." I said, "Well, why not if it doesn't make sense to you?" He said, "Well," he said, "you're the dad and I'm the son. And God uses you to tell me what's right and wrong." And so he said, "And so if you don't want me to do it, then I'm just not going to do it." I said, "That's good enough. That's fine." So I was happy. But what I'm saying is this: at least my children knew, even if they didn't agree, they knew that I had a reason. One of the reasons I really have a great respect for Bill Rice III, who's a good friend of ours. We became friends about when our church was about 13 or 14 years old. So we've been friends for 20, a long time, 26, 27 years. The thing that drew me to him was this: he had convictions that are different than mine. But whenever I asked Bill Rice, when I first met him, and he said this, I love this expression: "You have a brain and you have a Bible. Use it." He was what I called a thinking fundamentalist. It wasn't just, "Here's the old line, but here's why we believe what we believe. Here's what I do. Here's why I do what I do." And we need to be that way. So prove to your children your convictions. Then number 7, personally apologize. When you've done something wrong, apologize to your children. Ask them to forgive you. Parents are not perfect. When we did that which was wrong or saw some inconsistency in our life, we confess that to them. Because I want you to understand, a child sees hypocrisy. Be real with your children. And when you do something wrong, admit it. And ask for forgiveness. My wife has always led the ladies in our church in different ministries, like ladies' fellowships and that type of thing. I don't remember exactly what the event was, but my wife was going to be with a ladies' event all day long. Well, when that happened, for me, that meant I had to come up with food for the kids. Food when the kids were with me was pizza, because that you can order that. You can get it from Little Caesars, $5 for a pizza. Well, that's great. Kids love pizza. And then popcorn. I can make popcorn. Good at popcorn. Really good at it. So I can make popcorn. We can have pizza. Then, that's back when there was VHS. I had a VHS machine. That was, if for you that are younger, that's a DVD, but it's not a DVD. And it was, anyway, so that year, a brand new Superman movie had just come onto VHS. It was coming out that week, and it was Superman 4, The Quest for Something. I don't know. And but we were like big Superman fans, and so I thought, man, my wife doesn't care about Superman. So I said to the kids, "Hey, then that movie's going to come out. When Mom goes and spends the day with the ladies, we're going to have a pizza popcorn, and we're gonna watch the Superman movie. Whoa, great! This is gonna be great. This is gonna be terrific. Okay, Mom, go! You know, and we're gonna do this thing. So it was all planned. It's gonna be a great big fun day. So Mom gets up, I get up. We're getting all ready. She takes off and she's out the door. Well, I'm getting things ready for the movie to start, right? And when I go into the bathroom, I got to tell you this before I tell you the rest of the story. Joshua got sick when he was very, very young and was and became very highly allergic. I think I already mentioned this, to ice cream and sugar. And so we found out that he couldn't have that, so we wouldn't let him have it. So what we got to replace it, because he, without having any kind of milk products in him, he had to have some kind of replacement for calcium. Well, they make these calcium pills. I don't know if you've ever tasted them, but they'll make them. They're about this big, and they're calcium pills. You ingest them. They make them in cherry flavored, and they make them in orange flavor, and so they taste like orange chalk and cherry chalk. If there's really disgusting, horrible tasting things, and so but we wanted to make sure that Joshua ate them every day, and we figured what was good for the goose was good for the gander, so all of our children had to have a calcium pill, and I'd put them out every day. Well, calcium pills taste terrible. They are horrible. They're good for you, but they're terrible. And so we would find calcium pills stuffed under mattresses. We would find them under the pillows of our thing. We'd find them every place. We'd find them underneath couches. We'd find them stuck in corners in the kitchen. We'd find them everywhere. We'd find the dog eating and trying to get rid of the calcium flavor as they stuffed it in the dog's mouth. I mean, that happened. And so this was a deal that we were constantly battling. You're going to eat your calcium pills and put them in your mouth like right now, because I'm going to watch and chew them up. And so we had to deal with that. So my kids had this hatred for calcium pills, but they took them. So we're getting ready for this big event, and Mom's gone now. I go back into the back room. We had a downstairs back room, a bathroom, and I went into the bathroom, and I'm just getting ready. I don't even know why I was in the restroom at that time, but I looked in the toilet, and somebody had taken an entire bottle of calcium pills and poured them into the toilet. And I said, that's too much. I mean, there was the thing in the garbage, the empty container. I thought, I can't believe they did that. I don't know who did that. I ran out. I didn't run out, but I went out to the living room. I said, Matt, Josh, Charity, come down here. Faith, come down here. And they all come down. Faith's like about 4 years old. They all come down, and they're all standing in front of me. Like, they know something's going on when I say, Matt, Josh, Charity, Faith, get down here. And they all come down, they're standing. What happened? I said, I need to know something. I said, before we do anything today, I said, I want to know who threw the calcium pills in the toilet. Normally, with that, you know, there's automatically the guilt that's on one of their faces, so you can see. And I looked. Matthew said, I didn't do it. Joshua said, I didn't do it this time. And Charity said, I didn't do it. And they looked down at Faith. I said, maybe it was Faith. I said, and Faith just goes, you know, she's. And I said, Faith didn't do this. Faith had no idea. And I said, which of you guys did it? Well, it wasn't me. I said, look, I need to know something, because this, we're not going to go through the day. Somebody's getting a spanking for this, and I want to know who did it. Nope. I said, okay, go upstairs. Go upstairs. We'll talk about this later. Go upstairs. And I said, whenever you want to admit it, the pizza's here, the popcorn's here, the movie's here. Nobody gets anything until I find out who did this. Quiet. Nothing. I found out later that upstairs, Charity and Matthew were trying to convince Josh to confess it, because they said, Dad thinks you did it anyway. You might as well just do it and get it over with. So I'm waiting, and nothing. I mean, an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours goes by, and my wife comes in the room. I'm really upset, because I want to watch the movie. I want to eat the pizza, and I'm thinking, what's the deal? My wife walks in the room. Well, and she says, where's everybody? I said, you're not going to believe this. She said, what? I said, they're all upstairs, and they've been up there all morning. Well, why? I thought you guys were going to watch this movie. I said, look. I said, I went in the bathroom, and I said, I looked in the toilet. In the toilet, somebody had taken a whole bottle of calcium pills and poured them in the bath, in the toilet. She said, "Oh, David." I said, "What?" She said, "In the downstairs bathroom?" "Yeah." She said, "This morning I found that this thing was a calcium thing. It was 2 years old. I thought, these are all out of date. I poured them in the toilet." I said, "You poured them in the toilet?" She said, "Yeah." So I spanked her. No, I said, "Oh," she said, "they were no good." She said, I said, "Oh, I can't believe that." The kids are upstairs. They're still wondering what's going on. I said, "Matt, Josh, Charity, come down here. Faith, come down here." They all come down. And they're all looking like, okay, he's going to beat us all. You know, what's the deal? I said, "Listen, I want to tell you something. I was wrong." I said, "You guys told me the truth. You told me that you didn't do that. You told me you didn't know anything about it. And I didn't believe you. And I want to ask you to forgive me. I was wrong. I didn't believe you when you were telling me the truth, and that was wrong. Will you please forgive me?" And Matthew looked at me like, "You're kidding. This is like real?" And I said, "Yes, we forgive you." And I hugged him, and I hugged Josh, and I hugged Charity, and I said, "I want you to know I'm sorry, and I love you." And they said, "We love you too. Can we watch the movie now?" I said, "Yeah, we'll warm up the pizza and we'll start going." And that was it. But the truth of the matter is sometimes we are so arrogant that we don't admit to our children when we do wrong. And they know. Just be honest with your children. Apologize when you do wrong. Number 8, parent, don't pander your children. This is very, very important. You need to discipline your children. You need to discipline your children. It's very proper to spank your children if they disobey. The Bible tells us this, that to bring them up in the nurture. That word nurture means discipline. And let me explain something to you. Discipline is not punishment. When you're being punished for something, you want to respond back. The Bible says several different things about using the rod, not sparing the rod. The rod, according to the Bible, is not is a stinging instrument. It's talking about a switch off of a tree or a limb off of a tree and a stinging thing. It's the difference between this and this. It's a stinging instrument. My dad worked in carnivals before I was born. He must have known that I was going to be born, and some premonition. Because he worked as a balloon guy in the carnivals, and he had what was called balloon sticks. He had a box about 10 inches, maybe 12 inches by 10, 12 inches. It sat right out back of our yard, and it was there before I was born. And my dad would say this to me when I was in trouble. He would say, "David, go get me a balloon stick." It was a horrible thing. It was about, a balloon stick was about this wide, about this long, and when it went through the air, it went like this. Ding! Ding! Ooh, you could hear it. And what it would do when my dad said bend over, it would sting like crazy. But there's no way in the world it would permanently hurt. When God says to use a rod, he's talking about a stinging instrument. I don't have time to go into it, but I want you to understand that the idea is this, that God has created your body in such a way, and your child's body in such a way, that it can be bent over. And if you do this correctly, you can take a child, you can bend him over your knee, a small child, bend him over your knee, protect his back with your hand, protect his legs with your leg, and you have two little perfect places that you can sting, and they'll get the point. And the Bible tells us this, that there's a way to do that. The Bible tells us if you do that when you're angry, it won't work. Parents say, "I tried spanking. This is what happened. Johnny did something wrong," and you said, "Johnny, don't do that." "Oh, now, Johnny, don't do that." "Johnny, I said, don't do that." He went on to, you saw him again. You said, Johnny, I told you not to do that. And then Johnny did it again. And you said, Johnny, I said don't do, if you do that one more time, you're going to get a spanking. Listen, when you are hit by somebody who's angry at you, all you want to do is hit them back. All your anger ever does is in your children or in anyone is stir up anger in them. Anger doesn't do anything. Anger is a means of controlling a situation, but it does not work in rearing children. The Bible tells us that the rod of your anger will fail in Proverbs. You can't spank a child when you're angry, or you'll just drive your child away. The Bible tells us this, that the rod and reproof give wisdom. So what I'm supposed to do is when Johnny does something wrong, let's just use my son's name, Matthew, is I'm supposed to do it this way. Johnny, Matt, I don't want you to touch that piece of paper. Don't touch that piece of paper. Okay. You've seen this happen. Don't touch that paper. Okay. So what do? You say, Johnny, don't, or Matthew, don't touch that piece of paper. And Matthew goes and touches the piece of paper. Then you give him a warning. You say, now listen, maybe it wasn't clear. You shouldn't touch that piece of paper because if you touch that piece of paper, you're going to get a spanking. We get that from a little passage in Genesis where God said, if you eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you will surely die. God gave a warning before he executed a discipline. So you say, don't do that. So Matthew reaches over and he touches the piece of paper in defiance. In defiance. So what do? You say, come here. Matthew, come here. I don't want to come here. No, you come here. Now, what did I tell you? You said, don't touch the piece of paper. What did you do? I touched the piece of paper. What's going to happen? You said you were going to spank me. Yes, I told you, don't touch the piece of paper. And now I've got to have to spank you. Now, the children are all different. Our children respond to spankings different. There are some that say, oh, okay, and they'll bend over. Others, ah, and that's why you learn how to control that. But you say to them, in fact, one of my kids, I would say, bend over, and this is how they would bend over. So you say, bend over, and you spank them. Why am I spanking you? Because I disobeyed. This is called the rod and reproof. This is correcting them. The whole purpose is correction, not punishment. Come here. You spank them. Afterwards, they're crying. You say, now, why did I spank you?
You spanked me because I disobeyed.
Yes, because you disobeyed.
You spanked me because I touched a piece of paper.
Yes, and that's disobedience. Yes, you explain to them that's disobedience. Now you say, I used to do this with my kids all the time. Did Daddy want to spank you?
No.
Does Daddy love you? Yes. Why did Daddy spank you?
Because I disobeyed.
And I can't let you disobey. I love you. Now, you need to ask Daddy to forgive you for making him spank you.
Daddy, I'm sorry that you had to spank me because I was bad.
Why would you do that to your child? Because I want my child to know that I'm not spanking them because I'm mad. I'm not spanking them because I dislike them. I'm spanking them because I love them and I'm called to correct them. It's a proper way to discipline your children. And if you'll do it, then it will work. And I would encourage you to look more into that. Parent, remember this. Your children have tons of friends, but they only have one set of parents. So parent your children. Don't pander them. Give them instruction. I'll give you one more thing. In fact, I'm going to give you two more things, and then I'm going to be done. Partner together with your spouse. You're not going to agree with everything about how your children should be raised. You need to take time to get together. When there's a difference of what should be or shouldn't be done, you need to get alone with each other, and you need to say to one another, listen, we disagree about this thing. How are we going to work this out? My wife grew up thinking cartoons were of the devil. I grew up every Saturday watching cartoons. And I watched, Bugs Bunny and The Roadrunner. I prayed that the coyote would get the Roadrunner. And, I mean, I wanted to see that happen, and I never got to see it. And I did see a T-shirt one time with the coyote holding the Roadrunner, and I thought, that's a great T-shirt. And if you ever see that T-shirt and you'd like to get me a Christmas present, I'll take it. So we had to talk about that because my wife thought, kids shouldn't watch cartoons, but I wanted to watch cartoons. So we came up with this conclusion between us that my children could only watch cartoons if I was present. And I thought, that's a good deal. So that's what we did. So I would sit down and watch cartoons and laugh about cartoons with my kids. But we came up with that conclusion. And though we had a disagreement about it, we worked it out. Don't be disagreeing in front of your children. Make sure your disagreements are worked out and united. Listen, words like this. Have you asked your mother about that? Dad, can I go? Did you ask your mother about that? Did you ask your dad about that? What does your dad think about that? Well, wait till your dad gets home and we'll talk to him. Wait till your mom. I want to find out what your mom thinks about this. And you say that in such a way that you're not blaming your wife or you're not blaming your husband. In other words, what you can say is, no, I'm not going to let you go because I don't think your mother will let you. Now, I would be the nice guy and let you go, but you know the way your mom is. Don't do that stupid stuff. That causes problems for you and mom, and you don't want that. Don't do that with your... Well, I would let you go, but you know how dad is. Don't do that. Don't do that. Now, mister, you should be able to handle that more than she should. But the fact of the matter is, you don't want to do that. Just be united together. Have a united front. Teach them to obey instantly. Pull your children away from other children who they don't do well with. Let me give you an expression that we used with our kids. We said when children got together and they were disobedient, when our kids got with other kids and they did something they shouldn't be doing, we would say this to parents. Our children don't do well together. Never accuse another parent of being a rotten parent or say about another person's kids, you got rotten kids. Don't say that or intimate that. Two good kids can get together and encourage one another to do that which is wrong. If you'll use this expression, it'll help with unity within the church. If you'll use this expression, our children don't do well together, then you can save a relationship that you have with another family in the church and at the same time understand that we're protecting our children from each other. So be sure you watch out for that. Practice positive replacement. There's certain things you as a Christian won't allow your children to do. Don't just take away things. Give them something to replace that. There were a lot of movies we didn't watch, but there were movies we did watch. There were a lot of places we didn't go, but there were a lot of places we did go. There was certain music we didn't listen to, but there was other music we always listened to. If you're going to take something away, replace it with something positive. Remember that. Then lastly, remember this. Pursue your child's heart. Do everything you can to let your children know they are more important to you than anything else in the world. You need to let them know, look, your relationship with God is number one. It should be. You've got to have that right relationship with God. Number two, your relationship with your spouse should be your number two relationship. That should be more important to you than anything else in the world. But together, as a husband and wife, your children should know that there's no one in the world that's more important to them, to you as a husband and wife, as parents, than your children. My children know that. To this day, they know that. They would know that if there was a situation and they needed me, I would leave everything else to go to where they are. We wear ourselves out saying to our children and our grandchildren, you are more important to us than anything else in the world. We are going to spend the next 8 days or 9 days in Pennsylvania in our cabin. And we could spend the next 3 weeks there by ourselves. I said one time to my grandson, I took two of my grandsons on a vacation, and I said, and then we were going back. I was going to pick up my wife, and then we were going to go away by ourselves for a week. And I had my two grandsons with me, and we were heading We were going back to the airplane. They said, Grandpa, what are you doing next week? I said, I'm going with your grandma, and we're just going to take a trip, and we're going to be all by ourselves for a whole week. And they said, why would you do that? And they couldn't understand that. But we're going to be going back there. Then on the 19th, we're going to leave, and we're going to fly back to Las Vegas. We're going to fly back to Las Vegas so we can pick up our motorhome, and we're going to pick up six of our grandchildren, and then we're going to drive back to Pennsylvania so we can spend a week in Pennsylvania with them, and we're going to camp all the way across the United States with them and camp all the way back. You say, that sounds exhausting. It will be. And we're going to wear ourselves out. We're going to come back, and we're going to be totally exhausted. But our grandchildren are going to know this, that Grandma and Grandpa love them and that we care about them. And we're going to have time to talk to them. We pursue our children's hearts. We run after them. One day we came home we had been traveling, and we got home. It was like 4 or 5 days of real intense doing something. I don't remember what. We got home, and it was like, we got home like at 5 o'clock, and we were just going to put everything away, and then by like 7 o'clock, we were going to bed. And we were tired. And we got in bed. We just got in our pajamas. We're just crawling into bed. And I'm telling you, I'm just about to turn the light off. And the phone rang. And I thought, don't answer it. But my wife answered the phone. And it was our children. It was one of my daughters and her husband. And they said, we heard you were back in town. Can we come over and see? I mean, we were just like, oh, it's so good. Oh, good night. I don't even know if I was going to kiss her good night. I'm just going to sleep, you know. And they called and said, could we come over? And Grandma said, sure, we would love to see you. Right, Grandpa? And I said, sure, we would love to see you. And I can't wait. And this is great. Oh, boy, we haven't seen you. And we hung up the phone. I said, oh, this is going to be tough. And we got up and we got ready. And when they came to the door, they were like just 5 or 10 minutes away. And can we stop in? And they came in. And when they came to the door, I'm on my knees and I'm hugging them up and I'm playing with them. And they all came in and they ate and they talked. And they said, oh, this is great. And I'm thinking the whole time, I just love these kids. Go home. See, why did you do that? Because I want them to know they're more important to us than anything else in the world. And their grandma's the same way. And we do that with our children. Pursue your children's hearts. Somebody asked me what it's like to have an empty nest syndrome. I have no idea. I don't think I ever will. I think sometimes my children think that Anna and I are a couple of old people who are lonely. And they're just always coming over to the house. And we enjoy it immensely. Let your children know they're more important to you than anything in the world. You'll always have a relationship with them. Father, help us to take your truth. Help us to live it. Help us. I pray, Father, this is just that what we've shared will impact the lives of people here. I pray that children 20 years from now that are adults will be raising their own children and doing it right because the parents that are here and the grandparents that are here pass these principles on to them. Thank you, Father, for the promise that we can affect our children and our children's children. And help us to do that. And I ask this in Jesus' name.